the Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 752. It's the 6th of April, 2017. Of course, start of the new tax year. And on the podcast today, I have Michael Travia, Managing Director of Boss Global Holdings, BOS is ticker there, and Michael talks about their recent suspension and progress at the company. Also on the podcast, Alan Minty, Chairman of New Oil and Gas, NUOG, and Alan talks through some of the highlights from their recently released interim results. I also have on the podcast Chris Bailey, Founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering Unilever, Barclays and Lloyds. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, plus the top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours. Also today, a new feature. I sort of have some kind of jingle there. But it's who to follow on Vox. And I'll give you a clue. This person is a CEO of an oil and gas company, highly followed on Vox. They've been on the podcast several times. They've just joined the Vox platform. And so you could probably get in there, chat to them, all that kind of stuff. But I'll reveal who that is in a bit.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Michael Travia, Managing Director of Boss Global. That's BOS ticker. Michael, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Great to be back again.
That's great. Listen now, if someone's listening right now to you and thinking, okay, what is Boss Global? Can you give us a summary as to the business, please, Michael?
Yeah, Justin, the audience probably keeps hearing various improvements to the way we communicate what is Boss Global. And I now summarise it by saying, what does Boss Global sell? And at the end of the day, it's workforce analytics. And everything we are about is owning intellectual property that enables organisations of any size who are absolutely focused on getting a productivity improvement from one of their biggest costs in business, the workforce, and they want the workforce analytics to be able to do it, then Boss Global, software company, Boss 360 work patterns, platform as a service, to dominate this market for years to come.
Yeah, okay. All right, Mike. Also, a bit some news out in the last few weeks. Now, first and foremost, a couple of people say you were suspended recently and not far back beyond that. What's the deal here? Why do we have the suspensions, and are they likely to happen again? What's going on here?
Yeah, Justin, probably one of my biggest motivations for wanting to communicate to your audience is, one, the buck stops with me. Mm-hmm. I have to put my hand up. I was a director of Forte and it was late. Managing director of Boss Global Holdings after the transaction on the 30th of August. Boss is running a marathon at a sprint pace. We are doing so much, but equally, with an amazing team, we've been able to, one, Boss Global be audited for its full year as part of that process to release our results, which went out yesterday. Two, the deal we did with AGI. Three, we've had to clean up Forte. And as a mining company with derivatives, with assets that needed to be, you know, were written off to zero, it's been an amazing effort by an amazing group of people. But the bottom line is there was so much to go in to preparing that audit, working with our auditors and our accountants. So, and of course, we dropped call design in at the last minute. We had a choice, hold it off, wait for the audit, or go for it. And we're focused on running our business. So, we took a risk. It was my call. The buck stops with me. I made the judgment call that we go with call design, that even having to deal with all the other issues you have to do with an audit, especially with a reverse takeover right in the middle of the auditing period, it put enormous pressure on people, and I can only apologise to shareholders for the embarrassment. Mm-hmm. And so I want to put this all behind us now.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a number of projects.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically you're very busy. Yeah, you've got through it. You're saying now that's all behind you. I mean, this will not happen again.
Correct.
Excellent.
And the buck stops with me.
It's nice to hear that admission, because I know there's many a managing director, a CEO, who would not make that admission. And they just try and brush it under the carpet and move on. But it's just nice to hear
that. That's not me, and that's not Boss Global, and it's not the culture. We have to stand up and be accountable for actions, but someone has to take responsibility, and I take full responsibility and the embarrassment. However, I did look forward to the opportunity of meeting shareholders at the UK Investor Show on Saturday, even under difficult conditions. And I'm glad they approached me. I'm glad they were constructive in their comments about wanting to know why. But I believe the many that did meet me and talk to me walked away understanding it is not a simple practice to run a public company.
Mm. Absolutely.
And shareholders have to be protected.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm one of them.
Exactly, yes. And I've got to say, as I'm looking right now, the share price is reacting positively this morning, anyway, to your news today. But as you mentioned, call design there, how's it all going, the due diligence and et cetera?
Yeah, correct. So I think it's fair to be to say and to be, again, open and transparent, but also being understanding of my fiduciary and governance duties as an MD. The due diligence is going very well. Call Design is an amazing cultural fit from a people perspective, and people are everything from a boss perspective as they are at Call Design. Importantly, I've been engaging with their team in Sydney, working with their directors and owners, but the enjoyment I'm having is I'm working on their three-year sales plan, and that's a three-year sales plan with Boss 360 work patterns at the heart of their business with their major partner in Aspect, which is a global contact center management software company. Mm-hmm. And I can say the DD will complete. Yeah. We wouldn't have gone this far, this quick, this focused. And obviously, as you can imagine, there was a lot of background build up to this. So I'm pleased to hand on heart, and in my opinion, the 40% investment will complete on time. We will come out the other end with a very clear sales strategy of working with Call Design and their people around the world. And we will be very focused on giving them a sustainable competitive advantage worldwide with Boss 360, working with their other partner, Aspect. And this is a great opportunity for Aspect, which is, I think Gartner has them in the top three of their magic quadrant in workforce optimization. This is a great opportunity for Aspect to look up to the two market leaders and say, hey, have a look at what Call Design's doing with Boss and Boss 360 work patterns. And this is an opportunity for Aspect to convince Gartner that they are actually onto something here through their Call Design relationship and with Boss 360. So, long-winded response, Justin, but in a very pragmatic way, things are on time, on target, and we're looking for a significant return on investment from this 40% stake.
Yeah.
But it's one about opening up markets, and two, we've always stated business and government, enterprise was a clear market for us. They have the clients, the trusted relationship. We get the enjoyment of riding on the back of that, but we'll be rolling our sleeves up on the street with them. So to spend a day on sales planning over 3 years with them, couldn't ask for anything better. I'm a little bit jet-lagged, but I'm fit for another day with them tomorrow and for the next 4 days.
Excellent. Okay, and aside from Call Design, what are the next couple of milestones or milestone you're looking forward to, Michael, there at Boss Global?
Yeah, well, now that we've almost put the Forte business to bed, this is, to me, it's a cleansing thing. So going forward, clearly business as usual for us is the release of Boss Time and our Boss 360 platform as a service in May, which we're on target, on budget, on time for. So that's, a transformational period for us. Equally, the patents and going beyond our wildest dreams there in the progress of that. And we look forward to fulfilling that in both the UK European Patent Office and also in North America. the products of what we have got, Boss Meat and Boss Automate. I got good news about what's going on in the UK and extending the pilot for Boss Meat. We've got two clients we're readying on Boss Automate, and we're running ahead of where we said we would be at the month at the end of March. So that's giving me a lot of confidence in our forward estimates for income and licenses. So we've also got revenue. We're tailing off our R&D on Boss 360. And so what that translates to is, when I look at it from a working capital perspective, a common thing I've been asked, Justin, is what does Boss burn a month? Well, now there's some evidence in the market being the financial statements, less than £116,000 a month.
Yeah.
And we've been able to get a patent acceptance, put products in the market, expand our team. More importantly, we've got revenue.
Mm-hmm.
We've still got our R&D program. And I clearly stated that Boss's ambition was not AIM. We've always stated publicly in the market, right from our admission document and continuous with me, NASDAQ 2020 is our focus, and our stepping stone was AIM. Our next milestone was Boss 360, on target, on budget in May. But now we have the opportunity to properly look at going to the main board of the LSE.
Okay.
And we are an enterprise company, and that's where we want to be. So our focus is getting our corporate office to London, getting our board in London, getting on the main board as soon as possible and practical, and delivering revenue.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, Michael, you know how it works here at Vox. I always ask any company that appears, if someone's not following you, can you summarise, please, in three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button?
Well, I'm getting more confident about this. One, first and foremost, and I think I've mentioned this before, if you ever wished you had an opportunity, be it an Uber, be it a Facebook, be it a Salesforce, at the ground floor, in a company that has the opportunity, it's not about disruption, but dominate a market for generations to come, then watch Boss Global. But more importantly, watch Boss 360 work patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, when you see, and it's difficult for shareholders to see because we only have to declare directors' interests, but 17 of my 24 team are shareholders in Boss, and we've just come out of a blackout period, maybe only for a couple more weeks, and we are all going to be buying shares. And we've been accumulating on those rare moments and periods when we do have. So when you see a company committed by its people buying shares in their company, that is something to watch for. I'm sorry, we don't report all the people, only the directors. Thirdly, and the most important, look for a company that actually is executing on a plan and is consistent in what it says, in what it will deliver. Yes, we have hiccups, the embarrassment, but you have an MD and a major shareholder who will stand up and be accountable to shareholders, as will the board and the people. So if you want to invest in a company which has governance, transparency, and a clear focus and executing on a plan, watch Boss Global.
Michael, good to chat to you. Speak again soon, hopefully. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Minty, chairman of New Oil and Gas. That's NUOG. Alan, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for you, Justin. Good morning, and how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I don't want to mention the man flu, but I don't like to mention it, Alan, but I've still got it. Yes. But anyway, listen, Alan, someone's listening right now, and they think, okay, so what does New Oil and Gas do then? So if you could, Alan, in a summary, what do you do there?
Okay, New Oil and Gas is it's a small AIM listed company. We have a focus on two strategic strands. First is we have some E&P assets in Western Newfoundland, which we've held for quite a time, and which we now have undertaken deals whereby there are farm out deals in place to reduce our costs, and with the real focus being on D&P, development and production assets, through a marginal field company, of which we own 50%. That is where the company's main focus is.
Okay, so the main focus, and where are you with that, and how are things progressing?
Well, I think they're progressing very well. We've had a pretty good 6 months, as described in the interims released about 10 days ago. And we've had considerable achievements. Perhaps I should list those.
Yeah, go for it.
There's been a significant increase in share price over the last 6 months, probably by a factor of six. We've reinvigorated the Newfoundland assets by coming to a production sharing agreement with PVF, who we believe will commence work a while on operation, followed by a testing phase sometime after the 1st of May. We've also agreed a farm out with G2 Energy on an exploration asset, EL1070, and we're hoping to indicate progress of that over the next few months. In the marginal field strategy, though, is the one in which there's been greatest interest and I think greatest movement. We agreed, we signed an agreement with COSL, Pan Pacific, which is an oil field services supplier, and which will form an important component of our financing strategy to acquire marginal fields. We had investment from Able, which is a Norwegian company and part of the consortium, and we've had a sort of continued work from the consortium, which is a group of companies which I've outlined before and outlined in the interims, which has been helping us to evaluate various opportunities.
Excellent, Alan. Excellent stuff. And so, on the resources you have, the assets there, what do we know about them? You know, from a technical standpoint, and what do you actually know? In what detail have you looked into them so far?
Well, for the E&P assets, obviously we've held those for a long time, and we have very detailed knowledge from very detailed knowledge of those, and that's why we've been able to establish those two agreements. For the marginal field targets, we describe these, or we identify these as being those which have very specific characteristics where we believe CapEx and OpEx can be reduced, the economics can be changed, and so changed to give good returns for investors. And so consequently, we have to go through a due diligence on various opportunities that we receive or we identify. There are always, the oil and gas sector is always requires massive due diligence on any opportunity because of the complexity of the projects and also the characteristic, which is if you get a successful project, you have huge returns for investors. So that's always the big time-consuming element. But as I've stated in a previous podcast, I believe that we'll be able to announce the acquisition of a project in the short term.
Okay, and short term, how do we frame this? Is this 3-6 months or what?
Yes, of course, it's all subjective based on the probability of concluding the work and being able to come to deal with the other parties. But I always think of short term as being up to three or four months, and I think as medium term as being six. So when I say short term, what I mean is that one would hope to be able to announce within the next 3 months.
Excellent stuff. So looking at it now, you're just below a 5 million market cap. What's the ambition here, Alan? Where would you like to take this company, ideally?
Well, firstly, we're in quite a good situation because that 5 million market cap reflects also the fact that we raised £3 million gross in the last 6 months. So we're reasonably cashed up. And that cash is obviously being applied for the evaluation and the evaluation of the opportunities. Where I would like to take the company is to acquire a small number of marginal fields whereby the economics are very, very sound, the investment, the returns will be very good, and the sort of project risks are much less than in the normal E&P sector. And I would like us to be able to do that in the next 2 to 3 years, with the first one being announced as I said, within the 3 month period.
Marvellous. It's all hands to deck there, and it's all busy at the moment. And as you know, Alan, anyone who appears in the podcast, and what I do is, if someone's listening right now and they're not following you and they like the fact that you're going to be busy over the next 3 months with some news flow coming out, hopefully, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button if they aren't following you, please?
Yes, I'll certainly try. I think the first point I'd like to emphasise is that we manage the project evaluation costs on our own overheads very, very carefully, so people should know that we are extremely focused on maximising returns to investors now, that we have very, very wide technical capability through the consortium we've established, so the evaluation of projects is of the highest quality, and anything we select, any deal we can do, will be extremely appropriate to the company and to the sector which we target. And the third point, I think, which is really important, is that marginal field projects are they're sensitive projects. They're ones in which you have to manage the capex and opex through life. You can't afford to have massive cost overruns because these affect returns to the investors that you've seen. But we have been putting together an overall financing strategy, almost a generic strategy for marginal fields that we select. And I'm hoping that that will be concluded in the very short term. And in the very short term, Justin, I would add, is less than 3 months.
Excellent. Well, Alan, it's good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll speak again soon, within 3 months. And until then, thanks very much, Alan.
Okay, thank you indeed. All the best.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of financialorbit.com, Chris Bailey. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Hello, Justin. Good morning to you.
So, what's happening in the world of bigger market caps? What's the news? I know you keep a keen beady eye on that level of the market. What's happening there, Chris?
Yeah, well, there's a bit of excitement at Marmite again. No, it's not that Tesco is the sort of agitating Unilever, who obviously are the producers of Marmite again. No, Unilever themselves have come out with an update. And basically, they've said, life's good. They're going to hike the dividend 12-odd%. They're going to buy back $5 billion worth of shares. And they're going to sell the margarines and spreads business. So bad news if you're into margarines and spreads. Unilever have decided that they're going to move away from Stork and other cutting-edge brands like that. And of course, all of this is a reaction to the surprising bid approach they had a few months ago from Kraft Heinz, mm-hmm. which obviously didn't come to fruition completely. It got leaked to the press and governments got involved and Kraft Heinz decided it just wasn't worth the hassle. But what's been fascinating is that Unilever shares were kicking around 30 quid when that approach occurred. Unsurprisingly, they went up on that. And now they're pushing thick end of £40 after this latest announcement as well. And it's kind of fascinating to me because, you know, Unilever, it's sort of semi-dynamic business, you know, quite a good consumer name in lots of markets around the world. But actually, they've only gone into overdrive in terms of internal initiatives and change and trying to sharpen things up once they've got a bid approach. And you see this so many times. It takes something external or activist to actually kick a management team into action. So good news for Unilever shareholders. I have to say, though, I've run the numbers and I must admit, near 40 quid, I am really struggling with Unilever shares. I think it's pricing in either ultimately somebody coming back and having a nibble or wondrous sort of profit growth driven no doubt by the emerging markets over the course of the next 5 odd years. So yeah, if I was a Unilever shareholder, having seen the action so far year to date, I'd be highly tempted to take a few off the table.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It almost hit £41, but it's come back a bit now. It was a gap. I don't know what, a few days back, there was a gap down and around about 39, 40 good. And it'd be interesting to see if it can close that gap, because if it does, it may go higher, but it does look a bit toppy here, doesn't it?
Actually, yeah, it does. And, you know, I'm a guy who bases analysis on sort of fundamentals or tries to get a feel for earnings and cash flow and stuff like that. And then I'll look at the charts and everything else. But I have to say, fundamentally, I'm struggling. And it's just fascinating to me to see how you can get this evolution of kind of sentiment, even in this massive biggest cap of stocks. You know, Unilever is one of the biggest companies on the LSE. And you get it all because there's been this external event. Somebody's come and had a tilt. Yeah. It didn't work out. but suddenly people are perceiving it in a different light. And the management team are kicked into a bit of action. But I have to say, taking that all into account, thick end of 40 quid, I'd be focusing more on using their products and buying their shares, shall we say.
Yeah, sit back and wait from the sidelines, see if it's a... Because at the moment, it doesn't seem like a great opportunity there, does it? No. All right, and anything else you're looking at, Chris?
Yeah, so otherwise, sniffing around for a few ideas, and obviously we're at this sort of interesting point of markets. People excited about the market generally, observing that April's often a positive month. The more people that say that, the more I wonder whether it's going to be a negative month. But, you know, that's just the way it is. In terms of a few ideas, I was looking at the banks, actually, the biggest UK banks. Because you take a look at the charts of a Lloyds or a Barclays, and they're sort of slip-sliding away a bit.
Yeah.
And sort of the fundamental reason for that, I guess, is centred on that there's a couple of things that drive the banks. One is obviously numbers per se in the economy. And obviously there's a little bit of fear about where the UK economy may go over the next couple of years with the old dreaded Brexit discussions and related. The second aspect, of course, is that banks are still being nobbled by sort of regulatory costs and PPI costs and all these other hassles now of being a bank versus 10 or 20 years ago. And then, of course, you've got the fact that bank stocks tend to perform better when bond yields go up, and recently bond yields have actually been coming down again. So you put all that into the mix and it seems a dodgy backdrop for banks. But I have to say, I think there's a bit of value emerging now. Lloyds is kind of the one for sort of widows and orphans, if you like. Government stake earlier this week down to just 2%. The government's going to exit their toot to sweet. And then it's going to be a clean, obviously privately listed, private but publicly listed company. And the thing is with Lloyds is a very, how can I put it, boring business model. It's based on people's propensity to basically keep on funding their mortgage. And even though there's been a little bit of worry about things like consumer credit and stuff like that, I have to say Lloyds looks set reasonably fair. I think they learned some lessons from the global financial crisis. It's a fairly mainstream, boring bank. Not looking bad value now as we move into the lower 60s. I would say fair value is probably in the early 70s, but you know, with a bit of dividend, 15% appreciation potential, not looking too bad. Maybe the opportunity to buy is when the government sells, which is often the way.
Is that a drop today, isn't it? It's dropped to, you know, kind of pencil today. Anything, why is that? Because it's oversold on the RSI and the chart. So
yeah, there's a few reasons. I guess the real reason that people are agitating over is that the Bank of England have come out in the last couple of weeks twice and said, we're a bit worried about consumer credit. We're worried about consumer credit growth. We're worried, therefore, that banks like Lloyds might be building up some weird liabilities that's going to bite them on the bottom some point in the future. And, you know, if you mix that in with sort of fears about where the UK economy might go, you could put together a scenario where Lloyds has some write-offs, some liabilities, some issues in a few years' time, which is obviously going to hurt the profitability and then hurt people's views towards the stock. My personal view would be that that's a bit overstated. And as I say, I've looked at this one now for a few years. Ultimately, the most important thing for them is people's propensity and ability to pay their mortgage. And my observation would be, at this moment in time, the Bank of England aren't raising rates. Employment levels are still okay. Sure, there's not great wage growth in the economy, but ultimately, are we on the cusp of a big mortgage default cycle? I don't think so. No. That makes Lloyds pretty good value to me.
Yeah, I think most people have been worried about an interest hike for years now. So I think lots of people, like I did, locked in my mortgage for the maximum amount of terms. So it's almost like, you know, you've been warned for long enough to, you know, get these cheap rates now while you can. So I don't think it'll be a big surprise if interest rates start to creep up at some point, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And obviously that'll work through the bond market first. But if you look at the bond market today, it's still relatively benign. There's not too much kind of big inflation in the world. People aren't too worried. God, things like index-linked gilts, they look ridiculously expensive, i.e. their yields, their implied yields are really low. So I think Lloyds is actually set fair. So I think in the lower 60s here, time to have a look at Lloyds. That's one a bit more for widows and orphans. The more grown-up one is undoubtedly Barclays. The reason why is because Barclays have a few sexier exposures. For example, a bit of investment banking, a bit of Barclays card, etc. That gives a bit more oomph. I have to say, though, Barclays still is a company that's simplifying. It's selling the Africa business. It's focusing much on its UK operations, Barclays card, obviously the domestic bank and everything else, plus a bit of investment banking. But when I run the sort of the numbers on it, I can still get 250p plus for Barclays. I think that's more like a fairer value. It's a bit more grown up and a bit more riskier than Lloyds, no doubt about that. But I think actually moving now into sort of the lower part of the 200, I think it's about 215 as we speak, I think value is starting to emerge. So both will have results in due course, but we're talking more into the into the late spring, early summer period. But I have to say, I'm interested by both. As always, trying to look to buy low and sell high.
Excellent. And yeah, it's amazing how we've all known that sort of phrase from even as kids, but it's so hard. It's you think it's quite simple to do, but it's not, is it? Because you know, it's always this fear of missing out, you know?
Absolutely. And as Buffett said, said many times, you know, the stock market is the only place in the world where the price comes off 30% and fewer people want to buy something. You know, you think about that in the context of you go to an auto forecourt or something. You know, if you're the car you want to buy had 30% off suddenly, you'd probably be more inclined to buy it. But in the stock market, no, fear and greed are funny old things. Look, I have a lot of time for things like momentum and whatever. That is a useful strategy and people can make a lot of money on it. But ultimately, your biggest opportunity is when you see something that's cheap, and most people at this moment in time don't think that's the case. When you have that anomaly, that's when you get opportunity. And certainly that's what I focus on. So that's why I crawl through the regulatory news statements, work out the economics and everything else in order to try to find those things. So what that's telling me at the moment is that Unilever is a bit overloved and Lloyds and Barclays are a bit underloved. Yeah. So I'll trade accordingly.
Marvellous, Chris. Thanks very much, fella. And speak next week.
Absolutely. Get well soon, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Motif Bio, MTFB. And I've got to say, the data from the Revive 1 clinical stage 3 study should be out very soon. I've had Graham on the podcast, and I noticed the volume's up in the last few days. It's always telling looking at volume. I know, because I do hold some shares in this, and I always look at the volume. And it's up last few days, and the share price is up. Now, there is a sort of bit of a resistance at 28 pence. But it could break that, because it's not long left until they reveal data from that, you know, critical phase 3 result they'll test. Number 4, Vissarion, VRS, of course, is a breakthrough recently from the Manchester University there, and Vissarion involved with those guys on making a graphene sieve that could basically sieve out salt water, provide drinking water for parts of the world that can't readily get clean water. At 3, Integumin, they were on the podcast yesterday. Ticker there is Skin. At 2, Infinity Energy, INFT. At number 1, the most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was URU Metals. And I know they're doing an event tonight with Momentus. But they released an RS yesterday. Overreaction, I thought. Really dropped out of the sky on that. There's nothing negative in that RNS. Crazy. But anyway, they are the most highly followed stock in the last 24 hours on Vox. Okay, here we are. Top 5 most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours on Vox. At 5, it's OilX, notice of change in substantial interest. I am struggling here, as you can see, but manfully, so I do apologise. At 4, Extract Resources, XDR, reorganisation of loan agreement and equity issue. At 3, Edenville Energy, EDL, it's a mining licence update. At 2, Sirica Energy, SQZ. Results for the year ended the 31st December 2016. And number 1, the most liked RNS in the last 24 hours, even though it made the share price drop like a stone, was the URU Metals Zebedela Project Update. Be interesting to hear the chat and gossip after Momentus events. It's a one-on-one sort of meeting with John Zorbas. The Zorbas Effect. Let's see what happens. Okay, who to follow? The new feature for today. And that person is, like I said, CEO of an oil and gas company, and it is Ed Dawson, CEO of Prospect Oil and Gas. All you need to do is essentially, I've got a little link here, but just search for Edward Dawson on Vox Markets. He'll be there. Hit follow and you'll get whatever he sends out there, and also you can hit him up for a chat. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.